This week in Retronauts, Drakwe Pasa. Anyway, what is happening in my brain? I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm Jeremy Parrish, and I thought I was sick, but then it started to go away. I thought, oh, I got something at Midwest Gaming Classic, and now it's coming back. And I realize it's because I drove around for like an hour and a half with my car top down, and there's still pollen happening, and I think it's the part of the pollen season where I'm actually allergic. So I can't enjoy the weather because the trees are doing their tree orgy, and that makes me angry. But we're not here to talk about the reproductive habits of plants. We're here to talk about video games, specifically Dragon Quest, or Dragon Warrior, if you still live in that little world. And, you know, we've talked about this topic before, quite a while back, actually. I think, Nadia, weren't you on the Dragon Quest 1 and 2 episode?
It is extremely, extremely likely.
I feel like you were. I think there was a segment that we did with you,
and
we recorded part of it at Alex Frioli's game rental shop. Definitely not a gaming bar in Nagoya, and that was close to a decade ago. So I feel like it's fair for us to revisit the Dragon Quest topic. But also, this is not just a you know, a retrospective on the game. It's more about its legacy, because guess what? This month, Dragon Quest turns 40. Oh, look at that, Diamond. Found episode 169.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for using the notes in such an efficient, cool way.
You're so smart. So I guess I've spoiled most of who's here. Let's go down the sequence in terms in order of spoilage, starting with you, Nadia.
Hi, we're not doing the usual, like, I am a whatever, but I was going to say, I am a red dragon. You can only find me in the basement of the Dragon Lord's castle. And say yes, kids. It's always good to say yes to drugs and to the Dragon Lord.
If you don't say yes to the Dragon Lord, you don't get Dragon Quest Builders.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
So say yes. It's good for content creation.
It is. Do it for the vine. Do it for the vine, everyone.
That's right. All right. Who else have we spoiled there?
Hello, this is Diamond Fight, and if anyone dies during this recording, I'm taking half your money.
You're not going to drag us to the church and revive us? Wow. Rude.
Oh, of course, I'll bring you back to life. Of course.
I look very handsome as a coffin, thank you very much.
And finally, there is one person whose presence we have not spoiled. Speak up, secret surprise guest for everyone who has not read the notes.
This is Kevin Bunch, and I'm here to sell one of you this fine cursed belt.
Oh boy, how can I lose?
What size is it?
It can be any size it needs to be. That's why it's cursed.
All right. Excellent.
It's one size smaller than it ought to be. Yes. That's the curse. It's a little uncomfortable. So, yes, Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior. You know the story there. Does someone want to give that story really fast and explain it?
Copyright problem.
What's that?
Just it's a copyright problem. They couldn't get the copyright for Dragon Quest in America, and then they waited, and eventually they got it. So now they have it.
Yeah, I think Dragon Quest belonged to TSR for the longest time, and the last Warrior game that I can think of was, God, it was one of the Game Boy games. I'm looking at it now.
I think it was Dragon Warrior 3.
Yeah.
Unless it was one of the Monsters games.
It would have been either that.
It might have been Monsters 2.
It would have been very close.
But anyway. Early millennium.
I am old enough, just want to say, this is on topic, I'm old enough to have played RPGs at a young age where someone showed me a game called RuneQuest, and I was like, oh, this looks interesting, and we never got very far, but when I later heard about Dragon Quest, I assumed it was related to RuneQuest.
Ah, well,
all quests
in a
are
way,
related.
And all quests lead to home.
Thank you. So, Dragon Quest. Wow, 40 years. That's crazy. We're going to talk about the legacy of Dragon Quest, what it represented in video games, and what it brought to video games. But before we do that, I'm going to mix things up. I reached out on our Discord and asked people to share their thoughts about Dragon Quest and what it means to them. So we are going to lead this episode with, it's not listener mail. It's Discord member mail. That sounds kind of weird. It sounds too much like dismemberment.
Listener mail plus, because they give us money.
Ooh, I like that.
Ooh, I like that. That's the best kind of listener. Good.
Yes. All right. My kind of plus. So we're going to start with Marurun, who says, as someone who was introduced to RPGs on the Apple II with SSI's Gold Box games, no less, Dragon Quest had me worried for what console RPGs would be like. I was concerned that they wouldn't be worth playing. Final Fantasy changed my impression of things for the better, thankfully. So already, opening salvo, Final Fantasy versus Dragon Quest, there's no escaping it. The battle has begun. How do we feel about that?
The gauntlet is thrown.
I will.
No, that's a different series.
Well, I'm deep in the Final Fantasy camp. I don't even know what I'm doing in this episode because I love Final Fantasy. No, but seriously, I was definitely one of those people who saw Dragon Warrior on the NES circa 1989, and because of my age and my computer gaming experience, I was a little bit disappointed. You know, to put it in modern parlance, this is your king? It's like, what's happening here? Like, everyone's excited about this? This looks so primitive. You know, if you push one button to talk to somebody, you can't talk to them. You just get a pre-recorded message. You can't see the enemies on the world map. They just appear out of nowhere, which is, let's be honest, cheap bullshit. And ultimately, it's just you. You know, I came to Dragon, when I first saw Dragon Warrior, I had the experience of Ultima 4, where you have a party up to 8 people. When you talk to people in towns, you have to talk to them with the keyboard. You type in the words and they respond to you. You know, it's not magic, it's just programming. And when you're walking around the world map, you can see whether it's a snake or a two-headed demon, you can see them coming from a mile away and you can choose, oh, do I want to run away from them? Do I want to fight them? And that's part of the game. So my initial impression of Dragon Warrior was not great, but over time and by actually playing the goddamn game, I learned to embrace it.
So,
Nadia.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I think I might be opposite to everyone here because this was my first RPG. I did not really have a computer beyond I think we had a hand-me-down Commodore 64 by that point, and I think maybe the best we could do was Temple of Apshai, which I compared to playing Dragon Quest at the time, and I was like, okay, well, one of these is a lot more directionless than the other, and I think I like the one with the goofy-looking, you know, enemies better than the one with the stick figure man. So, where I was with Final Fantasy as well, so I was on console RPGs, that's all 100% where I was. And we'll talk about it later, but I understand now how primitive this game was compared to what was out at the time, because it was Dragon Quest, three that really, really, really got me to Dragon Quest. And it was after that that someone, I think my brother, gave me or rented Final Fantasy, and I hated it because it compared to Dragon Quest III, it seemed so slow and so primitive. And dear God, what was that poison sound when you're walking on the map? it was absolutely one of those games where, your parents would say, turn that off, go do your homework, because the noises were so annoying. And just, also it had a dead battery, so I had to reset the game. It would reset my adventure, 5 times while I was playing this game in my rental period.
Nah, seems bad.
So close to the Japanese experience. You just need, the big password screen.
Do they have passwords in the Japanese version of that game?
Yes.
Oh my lord of heaven.
Not in Final Fantasy.
Oh, I was talking about Dragon Quest.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, still bad.
It's like a poem that the king reads to you.
Really?
It has all your character data encoded in it.
That is the Imperial Scrolls of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it's nightmarish. That's really cute.
Yeah, that was a series that really, as I said in my presentation at Midwest Gaming Classic, that was a game that really should have been on disk system and not on a cartridge because they did not have battery backups in 1986. Bad times.
No, No. And, I mean, even in Japan, Dragon Quest was a little bit primitive, like the original. It was a weird game for them to focus on for North America, but we'll get to that, I'm sure.
Kevin, what about you? Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest? Go!
Oh, see, if we're talking like the first entries in both of them, I was always much bigger fan of Dragon Warrior.
Hell yeah.
Like, yeah, I didn't play the first Final Fantasy until like the 90s at some point when I got a secondhand copy of it. And I'm just like, wow.
Technically, it came to the US in 1990, so no one played it. Okay. I know what you mean.
Well played. Well, I was in high school, we'll put it that way. And I remember playing it and thinking, wow, this is such a worse experience than the first Dragon Warrior game. Like, wow, my characters are whiffing every other attack.
Oh, yeah.
All these combats take like 2-3 minutes to resolve.
It was slow, wasn't it?
It's extremely slow, like interacting with people and like the world is like very awkward.
Buying tents one at a time and potions.
Yeah.
It's just awful. And, you know, Dragon Warrior is very, like, it's very stripped down. Like, I didn't have that experience with computer RPGs that Diamond was talking about. But, yeah, it worked very well for me, the way it was designed, which I guess was kind of the point. You know, if you hadn't really played computer RPGs and in Japan, who the hell would have, other than a very specific breed of nerd? This was a pretty good introduction.
But, you know, you weren't there for the presentation on Metroidvanias, but like even though RPGs were not a thing on consoles at the time that Dragon Quest came out, there was awareness of RPGs. It was like a term that popped up a lot. And people kind of knew what they were, and they seemed to have been excited about them. Like, it was a term that marketers could throw around and would show up on box art.
Yeah.
Even if a game was not actually an RPG. So, you know, when Dragon Quest actually finally brought an RPG, a proper RPG to console players, I feel like it took a little while to catch on, but it was pretty seismic. It was like, oh, finally, that thing we keep hearing about, we get to play that now.
Mm-hmm.
As for me, I was aware of role-playing games when Dragon Quest came out. Like, I had friends who had computers, but we were too poor to have a computer. So I was kind of Nintendo's target market for their RPG efforts because, you know, I played the Xanadu when it first came out. I was like, ooh, that's kind of cool. It's like Zelda 2. I like that. I played Zelda 2 when it first came out before that. Then Dragon Quest, Dragon Warrior, I got for that Christmas a few months after Xanadu came out. And, you know, it was very ugly and the music was kind of annoying and it was very slow, but I was kind of into it and I played it, you know, that Christmas morning and was like, okay, I think I'm getting into this. And then I saved the princess. I was like, hell yeah, I saved the princess. That was quick and easy. But that's not where the game ends. Unlike all the other games on NES, saving the princess is not the grand finale. That's just the beginning of your adventure. And she tells you that you need to go find other things and beat the Dragon Lord and that she loves you. Oh. And yeah, it's very sweet. So, you know, then I heard there was going to be a Dragon Warrior 2 and I said, oh, there's more than one character? I don't think that sounds fun. Like trying to manage all these different characters and having to share everything between them, you know, that's just me. I don't like other people. I don't like playing with other people. So that, you know, that was deep-seated all the way in there. But a friend of mine got Final Fantasy, and after he'd played through it, he lent it to me. I was like, I guess I should play this. And I was like, oh, this is actually really good. I get the multi-character party thing. This game is much bigger and more adventuresome than Dragon Warrior. I like this. This is good. And so I kept playing Final Fantasy games and not Dragon Warrior games. And I was kind of snotty about Dragon Warrior 7 when it came out. Although in my defense, it was very slow, very late.
It had problems.
Much, much later than it should have been. And also very ugly and a little bloated. So I was kind of snotty about it. But then, you know, years later, I was like, no, wait, it clicked. I get it. I love it. It's good. So that's my story. Good podcast, everyone.
See ya. Yeah.
Dragon Warrior 7 bloated like a Seaborn corpse. It's a very, very on mark, on brand.
They've remade
it
twice, and they keep stripping things out. And I hear the new one, what is it called? Reimagined?
Reimagined,
is finally like, oh, yeah, this is doable. Although, you know, people who love the original are like, they stripped out all the cool stuff. Like, they took out so much personality. So
they definitely. So some people definitely feel that way. Not me. I loved Reimagined. I actually loved the 3DS game.
I would actually like just a direct port of the original, just to have it.
It'd be nice.
If they did, you know, the pixel remaster thing or whatever, like they did the HD 2D thing, I'd be okay with that. But I feel like maybe they're not going to do that. I don't know. I feel like it's weird. That's like the best-selling PlayStation 1 game in Japan. And at the same time, Square Enix seems a little weird about it. Like, they just won't, you know, reissue the original game. It hasn't come out in its original form since 2000.
They're very adamant about keeping it the way, like, really, really reworking it every single time. Not so much the way, you see remade Dragon Quest games on the SNES, and they're, you know, just like a general upgrade, sound, music, everything like that. They really keep reinventing Dragon Quest 7. It is close to the 3DS version on the Switch, but it definitely looks a lot different. And as you say, they did strip out even more than they did for the 3DS version of the game.
It is a little strange, isn't it, that, you know, the Final Fantasy pixel remasters are there, and they're, you know, obviously they have perks, they have tweaks, but they still kind of resemble the original game. Mm-hmm. But if you want to play Dragon Quest today, you either have to find an original copy, emulate it, or settle for some weird mobile port that has like a bunch of Vaseline smeared over everything. And yeah. I don't care for that. I'm not buying that.
It's bedazzled.
Bedazzled. I like that.
You call it like a TikTok filter.
That's a good way to put it.
Or the Uhura filter. So now we have a missive from Jordan Vickers. We're 20 minutes into this, and we've only gotten through one letter. So this actually just may be the community episode. I don't know. And that's okay if that's how it is, because Dragon Quest, despite my initial misgivings about Dragon Warrior 2, is about community, and it's about sharing and kindness and the party and juggling your items within the limited party carrying space. So Jordan Vickers says, "What DQ means to me is the power of reading. I've been playing games so long that I actually have memories of not knowing what is going on in games like DQ. My cousin had the original game on the NES, and while I had an idea what to do with most games on the console back then, this one eluded me. I tried so many times to get out of the first room and down the stairs. However, not being able to read yet made it a challenge.
Oh, boy.
Baby.
I would also watch my older cousin play and wonder what was going on. I had questions like, how was he fighting the monsters? And what exactly was going on? Years passed, and in middle school, I saw in a magazine for a remake of Dragon Quest 1 and 2 for the Game Boy Color. I saw the article and realized that this was that game that was such a big mystery when I was 4 years old and just gaining self-awareness. I bought the port and fell in love with the first title. Not so much with the second, though. Even with the ability to read and have decent logic, the second title was way too vague and hard for me to finish."
I'm glad the Game Boy games came up, because that was...
Yes.
That was my... I think that was really my entry into Dragon Quest as like, oh, this is good, actually. Because, you know, however many years later it was, I had a Game Boy, and I was experimenting with Game Boy stuff. I was just filling time at work. I had played Pokemon, and I thought Pokemon was fun. And I was like, well, what other RPGs can I play on this thing? And I discovered that there were the Dragon Quest, you know, remakes of 1, 2, and 3. I think, is it 1 and 2 are one cartridge and 3 in a second? Or
Yes. 2 are before the black and white Game Boy as well, but 3 is exclusively a color game.
Right. So I bought all of those and played all of those piecemeal on my work break, and I really got into it, and I really had fun with it. And I love the fact that they, you know, the game is not that complicated as far as graphics go, but they really figured out, okay, we can make this work on a small screen, and we can make it portable, and now everyone can enjoy it. And again, I just wish, like, this should be something that should be on my Switch, but it's not without, you know, ugliness.
Yeah, like, 3 for, when it was still Dragon Warrior 3 on the Game Boy Color, that's a great game. That's a great adaptation of the SNES version of the game. Like, the sprites move, and when I got the port, the iPhone port of 3, and I saw the sprites are static again, I'm like, this is garbage and stupid, this is dumb. But yeah, I, of course, was a Dragon Quest fan since, like, day one. I loved 2, I loved 3. 4, I didn't get a chance to play, because by that point, like, it was really, really hard to find, especially in Canada. And it was the Game Boy games, I think, which started to come back because Pokemon was such a huge hit. So they brought over Monster Hunter. Sorry, they brought over Dragon Quest Monsters. And then they brought over, like, the Dragon Quest games again. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. I love Dragon Quest. I love being able to play it again. I love that it's portable. And I bought 1, 2, and 3, and I was like, okay, it's Draco Lord, but I can deal with this because I'm getting to play this game again. It's a great game. And so that really got me back into Dragon Quest full force, was those Game Boy releases. I really haven't let go since, especially once a friend of mine showed me Dragon Quest 8, and, like, that was it.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way there. Like, I played the first game, and I loved it. Couldn't not find 2, 3, or 4 as a kid, despite my, you know, best efforts and birthday
it was list hard to find,
requirements.
Yeah.
But when the Game Boy Color ones came out, like, I had a Game Boy Color at that point, and it's like, oh shoot, I can finally play 2 and 3, and bounced off of 2 real hard, but 3 I ended up playing.
I loved 2 as a kid. It didn't make any sense, but I was the kind of kid who played Simon's Quest because I liked to wander and try to get answers to what I was supposed to do, and most of the time it was useless, but I just loved the experience.
God, I can't even tell you much about 2 from that playthrough other than, like, I played for a handful of hours. It's like, all right, that's enough. I'm going back to 3.
Well, yeah, if you have 3, 3 is definitely the better choice to play.
Yeah, I got 3 first from the Game Boy reissues.
Oh, so, yeah. That'll, you know, do it.
That colored things a little bit.
But, so to speak.
Yeah, that was a good time. And I now have a copy of 4 and still have not sat down to play it, but it's on my to-do list at some point.
4 is so good. Do you have the DS version or some other iteration?
This is an NES cart.
Oh,
I do have I do have the DS version of 5, but that also has not been loaded up yet.
That's got to be on the Switch already. Come on, Square.
No. Keep that copy of Dragon Quest V for DS. That'll pay for Brahms College.
It really will.
That's true. But, like, going back to the original letter, I remember, like, when we first got that game, like, I could read at that point. I was literate, but because I had no experience with that kind of RPG, my initial, like, go-to for that was, like, The Legend of Zelda. Mm. So I remember my sister and I just sitting there, like, messing with this game. It's like, why? How do you attack things? Like, how does any of this work? Why do you need, like, menu to go through stairs and doors?
That is kind of annoying.
It was like a whole weekend of us trying to just, like, parse out how this game functions compared to literally everything we had experience with. So I understand the mysteries here.
Absolutely.
See, it's funny people talk about the menu stuff, and again, coming from a computer background, that was something I was just used to. It's like, oh, you find something, you have to make sure to use the open command, and then in case of Ultima, you have to just tell them where, not just open whatever, open something to the east or open something to the west. It's like, oh, it's a door. I can't just push it open. I have to say open north as if there's, like, I'm surrounded by doors. Like, just, it's funny how Dragon Quest, even though it feels a little clunky in hindsight, it's even less clunky than what it was taking from originally, which was beyond, just, like, so minute. Like, you need to do this command, and you need to specify what to operate the command on, even if it's, like, you know, go down the stairs. Which stairs? The stairs you're standing on, dumbass! Those stairs! Go down the stairs!
Yeah, Dragon Quest, it feels like, did a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of, like, that. All the minutia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, computer RPGs were, like, starting to become, like, available in Japan. Like, you had the homegrown stuff, like Hydlide and...
Oh, yeah.
And whatnot. And then you had, like, the imported stuff, like Wizardry and Ultima and whatnot. But, like, at least the American ones were coming from, like, this sort of D&D background. Like, if you were playing these and you were using a computer, you probably were at least on some level familiar with tabletop RPGs. Whereas when Dragon Quest was first coming out, that was what? When tabletop RPGs started becoming aware, like, known of in Japan, really.
It's interesting to me to this day how Dragon Quest has taken from D&D in different ways than Final Fantasy. One thing, for example, that always sticks with me is how Toriyama does orcs. Those are like the original D&D orcs, I understand, like the original Monster Manual, when, you know, before everyone made them like scaly Lord of the Ring orcs. They were just those hairy pigs. And that was the first time I saw an orc, actually, because I hadn't really read Tolkien by that point. So I was like, I love this orc. I don't know what it is, but it's pretty much the coolest characters I've ever seen in my life, and I want to imitate it, and I think I tried drawing it. Because this was a series that introduced me to Toriyama before I knew what his name was.
Yep.
Which is saying, just those, you can't see it, dear listeners, but Diamond is behind, in front of a background of Dragon Quest monsters, and they're so iconic, they're just so perfect, so Toriyama. I desperately want to get a tattoo of just the wolf. Wearing the toga. It's so perfect. I love that character design. The wolf has this big cat tail for no reason. I think Toriyama just didn't know that wolves don't have cat tails.
Probably knew. I feel like he probably knew. I think he'd seen reference material.
Well, yeah, but he gave it a cat tail. Why not? I love it.
It's a fantasy monster. That's why it's monstrous. It's like a chimera.
You know,
and he's wearing a toga.
I don't know if my sister will ever listen to this, but I think she could agree with me that when we first saw the Draki monster pop up, yeah. We both like became obsessed with that for like, I don't know, a little while. We were like, oh my god, it's so cute and it's killing us. This is just great.
The way that so many early enemies have that stupid grin on their face, like especially anything from the slime family. You know it's a slime because it has a stupid grin. The same grin that Ditto has in Pocopia, by the way.
Yeah, there's a real, like, morphology to the monsters in Dragon Quest where, like, the simpler and less dangerous a monster is, the cuter it probably is. So you have, like, the Drakis and the Slimes and, you know, some of those basic enemies, and they're super cute, and they can barely do anything to you. But then you move up to, like, the Wyvern, and it's a little more, or the I guess, Chimeras in the NES version.
Yeah, I still call them
Wyverns.
They're
a little more... they're still kind of cute and fun, but they're a little more dangerous. And the skeletons, like, they're fun skeletons. But then eventually you meet the skeletons that are just like a black shadow. And they're really...
The wraiths.
They're going to mess you up. And you meet, like, the star wyvern and, you know, things like that, that it starts to wreck you. But then when you meet the guys that have, like, no face, or they're just glaring at you, like the golem or the axe knights, that's when you know you're in the deep dip. And you really have to start strategizing. I think the scorpions are kind of the moment where, like, oh, this isn't cute. It's not smiling at me. It just wants to sting me and chop me with its little claw things. I don't like this guy.
Purposely also is the green dragon encounter that you have a great chance of encountering when you're, like, level 2. And the first time you hear a dragon, the breathing fire sound effect, that is such a you are dead sound effect. And often you are dead it's at that level, especially. Is what follows that sound effect. Thou art dead.
You went into the dark tunnel at level 2?
But like it was like level 10 or something like... I'm sure someone could take down the dragon at level 5 if they really tried, but I sure as hell couldn't. And that was actually my first side quest, I guess, when you think about it. Like, because... I can't remember who was mentioning... Were you mentioning Faxanadu? Or Fezanadu, where it was like you rescue the princess and it's not over. That was a very popular trope at the time.
No, that's Dragon Quest.
Yeah, but you said also like in there's another game that you mentioned that when you rescue the princess and the game still goes on.
That's just Dragon Quest, Dragon Warrior.
Okay, well
that's what impressed me about it. I played it. I was like, oh my god, I saved her and now she loves me, but I still got to keep fighting stuff.
Okay,
I got to get stronger. I don't have all my spells yet, and there's like bigger, scarier things out there.
Definitely, but there's someone else who did that as well.
Gotta make it rain.
Final Fantasy kind of did that too. Princess, her name was Sarah or something, and that's where the whole loop
occurs. Like the first 5 minutes.
It's really interesting. I had to admit, as a kid, I was like, okay, I feel like there's more to that, and I think that's really interesting.
They saw Dragon Quest and were like, you know what, we can streamline this. We can knock
my
princess out like in an hour.
Yeah, they're just a speed run, just a like save the princess speed run.
Yeah,
you absolutely. You can save Princess Sarah as fast as an expert Mario player can save Princess Toadstool.
Garland will knock you all down.
I love the Dragon Quest monsters for a lot of reasons, but also I don't think there's another series where the monsters themselves essentially have starred in what, two different spin-off series? Like obviously there's the Dragon Quest monsters series, but I'm also thinking about the quote unquote Rocket Slime, the Slime Moni Moni series here in Japan, which unfortunately seems to be dead now, but like that's a game where you play as a slime and you're navigating a world full of all the other monsters, and they've joined up and they formed a gang, and the gang is based on tails. Like the more tails you have, the higher rank you have in the gang. But that means that even monsters that shouldn't have tails, like the killer machines, have attached a little tail to their back to signify their allegiance to the gang.
And I love that.
It's such a great series. I mean, we did a whole episode about the series. I don't want to go off on that series. But I just think it's so remarkable how this sort of menagerie has taken on a life itself and just become, I think, bigger than the series like as a whole. I think more people know the slime than know any Dragon Quest character. Maybe in Japan I'm way off base, but the internet at large, I think, knows slimes more than anyone else. That's what I think.
I think there's a certain part of the fan base that knows Jessica best, but for the most part, it's probably, like popularity-wise, it's the slimes, because they're in all the Dragon Quests. I know I've mentioned this before, but Dragon Quest Rocket Slime was the game that made me say, oh wait, no, Dragon Quest is good, actually. I've totally misunderstood this series. This is amazing.
It took that long?
Yeah. Dragon Warrior 7 didn't do a lot to... Like, I like it now, but at the time, I picked it up. I was out of work. I was like, I'm gonna buy this. This is important. And then I played it and was like, I did not have enough money to waste on this. This is not good. Anyway, bad times, but we got through it. So, this is from CrazySid86. We're going to get like three more letters before we run out of time. For me, Dragon Quest 1 was a very valuable lesson that you should buy some games with a manual. I bought Dragon Warrior in loose cartridge form at a flea market when I was around 7 or 8. Having not played any RPGs at that point, this game that required me to handle every action through a menu was frustrating and seemingly esoteric. I asked around at school if anyone had played it, and nobody had. So I just kind of kept it in my collection until my high school years when I got internet access and could use a guide. Having now played it through several times, it's one of my favorites to sit and grind through today. But for a few years, it was a flea market curiosity in the back of my cartridge holder.
I like that nobody knew what the game was at school. That seems so North America. I tried to get my friends to play it, and they were just like, you want to read for fun? So that didn't last.
I even got that kind of flack with Final Fantasy VII. That's the game that everyone was like, yeah. But I still had a friend. I was in college. And I was like, man, this game has amazing like presentation graphics. It just feels like the future. Check this out. And they played like 3 minutes in Midgar. And we're like, why do you have to do everything through menus? Why is it all word-based? This is stupid.
No, the bombing mission sucks.
And this was a very literate person.
Yeah, if they'd stuck with it a little longer, they could have been snowboarding.
Yeah, come on, man. Snowboarding in the morning.
That's a bit longer. But yes.
I always wonder, like, just the campaign, when I look back at that campaign that Sony ran and how they made very sure to only show FMV videos of the most dramatic parts of the game and basically just spoiling everything, like, in between episodes of Johnny Bravo, say, in my book. And I wonder how many kids like that just kind of got the game and were like, what the hell is this? What is this menu thing? What is going on? Where's the cool Lego people falling off buildings and everything else that was going on?
It must have worked. They sold
yeah.
A boatload of copies.
Sure did. Get the people who make cartridge games a cigarette. I remember seeing that ad on a bus thinking, wow, people care about RPGs, what?
You know, I had already at that point sold my N64 and used it to buy a PlayStation, but I was still really kind of ticked off about that ad. I was like, come on.
It was a little bit we're better classless. Than this.
Yeah. Come on, kicking the Jaguar while it was down.
No, I mean, Jaguar deserved it. Jaguar kicked itself while it was down.
Good one.
Yeah, the flea market mention in this reminds me of... This is not relevant to Dragon Warrior in any way, but back in the late 90s, when I started getting into retro gaming, which was barely retro at that point, oh, yeah. there was a flea market, and there was a stall where a guy just had... Like, it was just NES cartridges. It was just so many NES carts, just like walls of them, tables of them. And he was asking like $3 a cartridge.
Damn.
And at that point, you know, I was aware of eBay and online sales and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, I feel I like you. I've bought a lot of stuff from you. So I feel like I'm obligated to tell you that you're underpricing a lot of this stuff. I cut myself off here. This is like, I knew what I was doing to myself, but I was like, he was a very nice older gentleman, probably in his 60s. I was like this Dragon Warrior cartridge, you could probably get $20 for that. Dragon Warrior 4, I mean. It was like,
oh, Jesus.
You know, it was like Dragon Warrior 3 or 4.
Oh, God.
It was, you know, back then, it was probably $20. I was like, you could get, you know, 5 or 10 times what you're asking for some of these games. So you should look into it. So next time I went, yeah, prices had actually been adjusted to their proper
well,
value.
He
but
deserved
I don't
to,
regret it. Like,
no,
yeah.
That's all right. No, he's an older dude.
I got the stuff I wanted before I, you know, threw myself on a grenade. So it worked out, but...
Pulled the ladder up behind you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was pretty much like, that was my boomer moment. Just scouring the flea market for good deals and then blowing it up for everyone else. But I feel like I did a good thing for an old man. So
I think so.
Who's to say that
hopefully
I'm wrong?
Hopefully he's retired on those profits now.
I mean, it's been 30 years, so... yeah,
Jesus.
He's probably very retired at this point.
yeah, I'd say so.
But you know, that flea market story, it is fairly true, though. Like, if you got a secondhand copy of something that was relatively complex, you were kind of screwed. Like, I know one of the things that, like, people knock against, like, the ET 2600 game is the fact that, like, oh, I can't figure out what I'm supposed to do. All I do is fall in holes and, like, then I die. And that's probably because when you picked it up, you didn't have the book with it or the extra book that tells you specifically how to finish the game. And like the Raiders of the Lost Ark 2600 games the same way. I remember getting the Stellar Track, like the Star Trek port to the 2600 from a flea market, and just having zero idea how to play that game until the internet came along and like people had the instructions posted up, because like, who was I going to ask about that? Like the kids at school who barely even know what a 2600 is. No, like I was on my own.
That's how you make friends. No.
Yeah. My friends in school really loved the, hyper fixation on like, oh man, this is all I know about this game, Berserk. Just check this out.
Oh yeah, friends love hyper fixations. I learned that quickly.
Yeah, they adored it.
So let's move along to a letter from Scott. Dragon Quest means goofy European localizations on top of probably the most consistently strong JRPG series ever, and one that has never been afraid to try other things, like Torneko, Rocket Slime, Builders. Even more so, now that there is seemingly a dedicated Western audience. A loving balance between advancing the series and genre, while still giving fans what they know and love.
Absolutely.
Except 10.
Except 10. Yeah, that's one they're just not giving us in any way, shape, or form, and the fans are all we have on that one.
Well, I think we dodged the bullet, given how they recently announced they're going to do AI NPCs in that game.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
We can just,
they can keep 10.
Just what I want.
We missed the window.
If we want to complain about only Japan only stuff, I would love to complain about the fact that as far as I know, Dragon Quest Walk is entering its sixth year, and they still have made no attempt to localize that or export it for any reason.
I would love to
It's basically
that.
Pokemon Go, but you're playing Dragon Quest, and instead of capturing the monsters, you're basically like walking around and questing and having little battles. And I played it, you know, I got into it for a good long stretch because I live here in Japan, and it was really fun. And I feel like that game would absolutely pick up, and people would enjoy that. And, you know, America's nothing but space. There's so much space in America.
I know.
Let us do quests, Square Enix. Cowards.
I agree. I would absolutely play Dragon Quest Walk. I haven't played Pokemon Go in a while because my phone just sucks. But I still like open it when there's like when I'm at like an event or something. There's still like a bunch of people like playing. And when I was waiting for My Chemical Romance, I had like this big ass raid battle with a bunch of people, and that was fun. So people are still playing it, and I would absolutely love an alternative, the Dragon Quest alternative.
But I do also like the fact that Scott brought up the Europeanness because. Yes. I loved Dragon Quest Builders 2. I had a lot of fun playing Dragon Quest Builders 2. But at times, I feel like I needed a translation for the translation because some of those tough guys walk up to you and like, and I was like,
I love it.
Man.
Nothing.
Man, just give me a verb and a subject and an object, please. Please.
I actually had for...
You'd hate German.
I had a Pantheon of the Blood God episode, which is just like an episode of Blood God that we look really deeply into certain games, and one of them was for Dragon Quest Builders 2. And I had John Cartwright on, you know, the voice. And I said to him, like, is this how British people talk? Like, is this, how do you feel about the localization? And he said it was just spot on. It was bang on. And I love the fact, actually, that the modern localizations of Dragon Quest acknowledge the European, Western, like the old translations, like, there are games that when it takes place in Alifgard, they switch to that old European, like, dialect. And then when you, like, leave Alifgard.
Shakespearean, yeah.
Shakespearean, that's the word for it. And when you leave, they switch back to, like, Inuit and, like, all the layers of British slang.
It makes sense. I gotta say, it does make sense to a degree, especially when you have to talk to monsters. Because, as previously mentioned, there are so many games where the monsters talk. And monsters, of course, have their own, certainly in Japanese, they all have their own little, like, eccentricities in Japanese, the way they speak.
Yeah.
And you gotta localize that with something. You can't just flatten it out. Again, I don't want to complain too much about a person who's not going to listen to this, but when you hear quotes from Yuji Horii, who complains about the localization, saying that English is a simple language, number one, shut the hell up. Number two... Yeah. They do so much. They work so hard to give all these creatures and societies and different communities a unique identity. It can be a little frustrating sometimes, but I respect the work and craft that goes into this, and I do love it because it does reflect the original. Because, yeah, all these little guys, like the slimes talk this way, and the robots talk this way, and the giant statues talk this way, and, like, you gotta play with that. Otherwise, what are we doing here? You know, you gotta have fun with it. You gotta.
They did something similar, I find, with, again, Pokopia, which is by the Dragon Quest Builders 2 team, where all the Pokemon speak in different... You can tell, okay, in Japan, this guy's probably doing the infamous Kansai dialect, and, like, you know, this monster's probably doing this, and this monster's probably doing that. So, yeah, they gotta translate that somehow. It was a little bit of a disappointing quote from Horii, to be honest, but I won't get into that too much.
Yeah, he's really the king of disappointing quotes these days. Sorry.
Ah. So let's move along to BD Jeffy P. I learned about the game via Nintendo Power Issue 7, falling in love with the incredible artwork, which I typically use to fill in the blanks for the art in-game. I got to actually experience that game when I'd visit my mom on some weekends, playing through the game with my stepdad. I distinctly remember finding our first metal slime, which ran away immediately. I became obsessed with trying to find them again and beating one, believing that it would be rewarding to defeat. Of course, I learned with hindsight that it was not worth the effort later. I later got the chance to borrow a copy from a friend and enjoy it on my own. Over the course of a weekend, I completed the full game, enjoying the grind and growing power over the monsters in the final floor of Charlotte Castle. I was shocked by the choice you could make with the Dragon Lord to rule over half the world, the change into an actual dragon in the second phase that loomed larger than a typical battle window, and the close call in the fight. Close calls in the fight. As my first RPG, I fell in love with the concept of them, eventually buying my own copy of Final Fantasy, which further hooked me into the genre. I put Dragon Quest, the series, down for quite a while after renting the second game and getting destroyed and lost shortly after getting the ship. My love of RPGs continued with the Final Fantasy series for a long time, not revisiting Dragon Quest until DQ8 and renewing my interest in the series. I've played through a bunch of the games in the series, including a lot of the different ports of DQ1. When the HD 2D remakes were announced, I was excited to see this interpretation of the first game, knowing that it had to be greatly expanded on, especially since it was following after the third game's remake. I was not disappointed. The additional story beats, new dungeons, tougher battles, and improved interactions and depth to Princess Gwailin. The remake is my ideal way for newcomers to enjoy the game, and the original is still there for people to experience the historically significant game and its impact on the RPG genre. I need to play this remake.
There was actually a lot of complaints about the fact that they changed the first game so much to do exactly that. But I thought it was fine. 2 is really the star of that package, and absolutely worth the price of admission for that alone. But one thing I recently found that I just remembered is that Charlock, or the name of Charlock, whatever it's called, that's the name of like a mustard plant or something. So it's just a really interesting localization that just kind of stuck with me.
Hmm. Well, originally it didn't have like a special name in Japanese, didn't it? It was just like the Dragon Lord's Castle.
Probably, so like, I think it was one of those localization choices that we talked about earlier, which makes things so charming.
Yeah, I think it's a very great choice.
One much thing, more actually, going back to the localization for a second, is that Dragon Quest II was actually a really funny game in its localization, but you had to find some of the jokes. Like, I remember distinctly, if you go to the House of Healing, and they're like, hey, will you pay for this service, whatever it is, and you say no, they'll say, what, do you think leeches grow on trees? And then they'll give you a lecture about how they have, like, a wife and kid and a brand new cow. And I never forgot that. That was a really funny choice.
Yeah, I realized complaining earlier about the lack of proper ways to play Dragon Quest 1, 2, or 3 these days, I did skip over those recent 2.5D remakes. I don't want to piss on them. I'm sure they have their merits. I just, when I look at them, like, you've changed so much, I feel like this goes beyond, you know, making it accessible and turns it into, like, you know, It's like the Resident Evil, you know, not to bring up Resident Evil again because I'm obsessed, but like Resident Evil 2 versus Resident Evil 2, the two games really could not be more different. They resemble each other. They have the same structure as far as where you go in them and the characters you play, but the two games are so different. I would hesitate to call them, you know, they're just so far apart. And I want a Dragon Quest. I want a playable Dragon Quest 1, 2, 3 that at least somewhat resembles the originals.
Yeah, they kind of got Lucas'd there, didn't they?
Like, a little bit.
Here's the special editions. These are all you get. We're just going to keep tweaking them more and more. And if you want the originals, you know, tough luck.
Yes, where are you going to find a copy of Dragon Warrior for NES these days? It's vanishingly impossible to find.
Yeah, well, you know, even Dragon Warrior is a special edition of the original.
That's,
you
know, true.
That's true.
Janky game, so.
Yeah, they took out Jar Jar. It was controversial, Jar Jar. But I can get behind it. No, I met a guy at Midwest Gaming Classic whose, like, personal mission is to just acquire as many copies of the NES Dragon Warrior cart as possible. He showed me a photo. It's like he's basically America's equivalent of the guy who took a bath in Moero Pro Yaku cartridges 20 years ago. So, like, this is his thing. He like, has this website where he just, like, shows off his Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior cartridges. I can't even remember what it's called. It's called something like a massive collection of Dragon Warrior cartridges or something, or like I buy every Dragon Warrior cartridge I find. Like that is like the URL.
It's, that is such a specific.
I wish I could remember what it was called, but he showed me. I was like, man, God bless you. You meet the most interesting people when you do a book signing at that convention. I love it.
I bet. Oh my God.
I hope he has a bookshelf of like all of the little manuals that came with it from the
Nintendo. I think he just buys
Nintendo
bear
Power
cart versions.
Yeah, he has somewhere to go from there.
So here is one from Pra. As someone who didn't grow up with consoles or handhelds, Dragon Quest was originally something I didn't know much about. To be fair, the first Dragon Quest game that officially reached Europe was Dragon Quest VIII for the PlayStation 2. So for someone who didn't keep up with the genre at all, it was pretty much unheard of over here. As the years went by, I did feel that the main focus among JRPG fans was on the Final Fantasy games, another series I was curious to check out. But no, in November of last year, I decided that the beginning of my JRPG journey was going to be where it all started, Dragon Quest. And Square Enix had ported a mobile port of the original game to the Switch. No fancy 2D HD remake, no beginning in the middle of the series, it was as close to the original as I could come without playing on original 8-bit hardware. Armed with guidance from friends and the opportunity to check with a GameFAQ guide if I were to get stuck, I began playing the game. My first move was to name the main character Goku, as a reference and homage to Akira Toriyama. With that, I began on my mission to rescue the princess and stop the Dragon Lord. So what does this game mean to me? It was the first true classic JRPG I ever beat. Yes, I had previously both played and beaten Earthbound Beginnings, and while being very close to Dragon Quest, it was different. Dragon Quest really had that satisfying, you have a main goal, explore the world, and find out how to achieve it, gameplay loop that later games would expand upon. After finishing it, I understood why it was so beloved, because it was such a fun experience to play, as it holds up even today. While I don't have the childhood memories of the game series that many of my Retronauts fellows might have, I'm still glad that I did get to experience at the age of 30, and I'm looking forward to continuing playing the series. I have finished the second game, and I'm about to start the third.
Nice. Enjoy the third. Third's definitely one of the best ones.
Oh, I think Fight found, I think it was the Unorthodox Dragon Quest Collection.
Dragon Warrior Collection.
Or, sorry.
Wow. That is a lot of Dragon Warrior cartridges.
He has 1,000 of them. The Unorthodox Dragon Warrior Collection.com.
Okay, I really, really admire this, but I also wonder, like, just go to your kids? What does this do? Like, is this their inheritance?
This will all be yours someday.
Someday, everything the light touches.
Nadia, it's right up there with, you know, why do you climb the mountain? Because it's there.
Because it's there. Why collect Dragon Warrior? Because it's there.
Eventually, you buy enough of these cartridges, you're going to drive the market price up for everyone else.
That's true. And
then you cash in.
Yeah, it's basically, it's Goldfinger, except with plastic cartridges.
Exactly, right. You know, it's even got kind of a golden label. All right, so this one's from Woe. Since part of the question does focus on Dragon Quest I, I will answer that one first. Dragon Quest I is most likely the best example of JRPG 101 in terms of basic design. It's a bit messy on the progression side, 90% of the game is just grinding, but it shows how one could do it. It also does visual storytelling as well, when going to the town of Damdara, being destroyed by the Dragon Lord. So it makes sense how influential the series became from the very start. But that's all historical, and not really what Dragon Quest means to me, personally. Mostly because, being a bit younger, I never owned an NES, so my start was with Dragon Quest VII, still my favorite in the series. I'm sorry for the mean things I said about that. And Dragon Quest VIII. And now going through all the games years ago, I do feel each game offers something amazing with stories, characters, monster design, and battle balance. They honed each game to a sharp edge to make you always feel like you are moving forward, while also giving lots of time with each setting and character to make you feel something. Don't know what is in store with a series where 2/3 of the core people are gone, and with Square Enix hyping up their use of AI, but I just hope the best with what is next. Boy, don't we all.
Do we ever.
I totally blanked out, like, just wiped from my mind the AI thing.
I know that they were, like, I just know the Dragon Quest X thing, and it's so disappointing because the reason I got into games like Dragon Quest is because they're stories, and I know they come from people, and, you know, I'm not interested in anything a machine makes in that regard. I don't want to... I'm sorry, machines, you don't have a story that you can't reflect through your writing. It's just not happening. Until you're Mega Man X or Zero, I'm not accepting you.
And, you know, in Dragon Quest being the series and a game that, like, put the artists behind it, like, yes, so front and center, like, this is Toriyama's art, this is Sugiyama's music, this is, you know, Hori's scenario. Like, I don't know, it's very disappointing.
Very.
In, like, an extra level. Like, what if they made a Mario game, and they're like, all right, this one's made with AI. Good news, everyone.
But what does that mean exactly? Like, there's, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how maybe deliberately a lot of marketing around AI has conflated machine learning with generative AI. And it's not like video games haven't been using machine learning and, you know, kind of iterative AI for a long time. Like, look at Skyrim 15 years ago with its Radiant AI, where it would just kind of generate quests for you. They sucked, but yeah, they weren't offensively bad. It was just kind of like, oh, it's just me doing busy work again. Okay. I mean, is that what he's talking about? Is just like, I'm going to do the thing that Bethesda did a decade and a half ago? Or is he actually talking about, like, just, you know, every character you meet is a hookup to ChatGPT, and you're like,
that's the impression I
go up to them.
The ladder.
They're like, defeating the Dragon Lord, that's a great idea. And I think you're the character, you're the hero to do it.
I think you're the hero.
It's the latter. It's the idea that you would talk to NPCs and you'd be able to talk, you'd be able to ask them questions, and they can do small talk with you, and they promise pretty, we swear to God, they won't say anything inappropriate. No. They would never.
Never,
and
no.
All I can think is, like, as soon as you put this online, there'll be something gross on the internet within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Shorter than that.
People are going to ask for a description of Puff Puff, and it just goes off the rails from there.
Or they're going to say, like, oh, I can't tell you about Puff Puff. You know, that's you know, not right. And then you could say, okay, but my grandmother used to have a cookie recipe called Puff Puff. Can you explain to me what that is, what Puff Puff means, please? And, oh, well, this is about Puff Puff. There's a lot of tits involved. Did your grandmother's cookies involve tits? Yes.
I try not to think those thoughts about my family members. I don't need to know about their...
Well, you see, I'm cursed.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's what
you should have bought
you.
That belt.
Should have bought the belt. I have to go to the old man and get the belt removed. Dude, I can't go to a buffet. Can you, like, get rid of this belt, please?
That's what separates you from the ChatGPT grandma, see?
See, that's there true. You go. That's why you shouldn't use ChatGPT, people.
No tit cookies. All right, well, so much for this being all ages.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. It's fine. Children weren't listening to this anyway. And if they were, you made a poor choice with your life, child. Step back and think about your failings.
Listen, those kids tuned out.
It's a hard lesson, but you need to learn it.
Those kids tuned out as soon as they learned that you had to use a stare command.
Yeah, basically.
Yes, but, you know, it was running in the background, and then they heard nodding, and they were like, oh, hello.
Hey, I like this podcast.
Yes, I will pay money for Acts of the Blood God. And this new book.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you should read the whole book Nadia wrote is just recipes for those cookies.
It's just a whole recipes for tit cookies. It's insane.
They're called Puff Puff.
I'm sorry.
Much better than the Redwall cookbook in that regard. In that one regard.
It has more breasts? What?
Well, we've gone off topic. So Arnpoli. Let's steer it back into the right direction. Dragon Quest was my gateway to both RPGs and emulation. At the time, it was exactly what I could sink my teeth into. I wanted to play the sequels, and when I couldn't easily find them, I discovered emulation and played them that way. More recently, I have enjoyed getting to learn the Dragon Warrior Randomizer. It is surprisingly deep, and I have even raced it competitively with moderate success. and may not be the biggest RPG fan today, but Dragon Quest expanded my circle of interests.
Oh,
when I think of formative games in my life, Dragon Quest is near the top.
I could see a Dragon Warrior randomizer being really fun.
I could see a Dragon Warrior. Yeah, that could be fun. I might look up a run of that later.
Yeah, we definitely need to have a randomizer discussion on this podcast. We need it because there's so many fascinating projects out there with people who are taking classic games and reshuffling them and basically making them replayable forever. And that's admirable.
Yeah.
And all without AI.
There you go.
They don't need it.
It's true.
They don't need that crap. I don't need to talk to an NPC and ask them how the weather is. I know what the weather is. I got a window.
Yeah, I remember, like, I didn't come to emulation for much later because it didn't really exist at the time, but I did take up other, like, RPGs after a while, once it became clear I was not getting to play any of the other Dragon Warrior games.
Same.
So, like, that's how I played, you know, Earthbound and you know, Mario RPG, eventually Chrono Trigger and Suikoden, but yeah, I remember hopping on emulation at the time. I think the first one I went for was friggin', well, it was Chrono Trigger, but then, like, the Sailor Moon RPG.
Oh, that's, I hear that's pretty good, actually.
It was pretty good, but, like, I remember hearing so much about, like, Dragon Quest V at the time, and, there wasn't really a fan translation yet, but there was one for Sailor Moon, so.
Oh, there you go.
Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, halfway there.
I also kind of discovered Dragon Quest through a little bit of emulation because I mentioned 4 was not a game that I could find, so I emulated as soon as I kind of knew how. And 4 is not my favorite. I'll be honest right up front. I don't like the broken up arc of it all, but there's certain parts of it I do love. I still think that map theme's a banger.
So you might not like Sailor Moon.
Does it have the same map theme?
The map theme, I was talking about, like, the way it breaks up the party and everything.
Oh, well, it kind of makes a little sense, because it's the Sailor Scouts. But, yeah, and at the end of the first season of Sailor Moon, they all kind of got broken up, and that was cool.
That's my thin, you know, linkage between Dragon Warrior and that.
It's good enough.
Okay, Warget says, back when I was a kid, I was a big Dragon Ball fan. I remember going to a mall with some family and seeing a copy of Game Boy Color Dragon Warrior 3. I mistook it for a Dragon Ball game, because Toriyama art plus dragon in the title, the hero looked like Gohan, and I really wanted it. They didn't get me that, but they did get me the Dragon Warrior 1 and 2 Game Boy Color multi-cart. Most of my memories of the Game Boy Color Dragon Warriors in general were mostly just wandering around blindly and restarting over and over, not knowing what I was doing, but still having fun. I always go back to that moment as the catalyst for what got me into JRPGs growing up, with Dragon Quest in particular.
Yeah, shout out to Aimless Wandering, everyone who likes to aimlessly wander. That was one of the things that really drove me to the first game. The second game, actually, and the third, which I rented, we rented from an independent place that was actually really dedicated, and they photocopied, like, those big-ass guides for each game, so I had something to kind of guide me through it. But still did a lot of wandering, especially in 3, and 3 is really meant for wandering. 3 is a really good game for that. Like, you can go long distances before it says, okay, stop, you have to go back and get this before you can get further.
You know, the first time I played through 3, I got as far as the ship, where the whole world opens up, and then I took a break for a month, and then I couldn't remember what I was doing, and that's, like, the worst place to have that happen.
Yeah, that's we got the whole world open, where do I go? Oh, no.
And it's our world. I love that. When I discovered that the Dragon Quest III world essentially is our world, with, you know, some analogs to real-life countries and such, like Zipangu, whatever, I thought that was adorable. I loved it.
Yeah, you have a lot of little analogs to our world. It's really cute, yeah.
Which they did again, decades later, in Sly Morty Morty Dragon Quest III, a game I will not shut up about.
I'll play that.
You should. Everyone should. It should be on everyone's Switch for free.
It should be on the curriculum. It should be in the school curriculum.
They should give you one when you graduate from school. Here you go. You get a diploma and Dragon Quest Slime. This letter, like, talking about getting into Dragon Quest and RPGs in general through the Game Boy Color games kind of makes me think about how the Dragon Quest series has been around for a long time, and it's had a very sort of choppy localization, and there have been some lacunas where it just kind of dropped off. And so I feel like there's sort of different eras where people could have had an entry point into the series and kind of, like, they think about Dragon Warrior, Dragon Quest a different way because they came in it at a different time. It's kind of like you can be a Phil Collins fan because you love old Genesis from the 70s, or because you heard his 80s pop hit stuff, or you loved Tarzan and Brother Bear. So, like, there's three different audiences that are like, I like that guy's music, but they all want very different things from it. And I kind of feel like it's the same, potentially a little bit the same way with Dragon Warrior. Like, you know, I want the really kind of early NES games that are slow and a little simple, or I want, you know, kind of the millennial type stuff that was a mix of, you know, PlayStation releases that were kind of all over the place and these classic reissues for Game Boy Color with monster collecting, kind of like Pokemon. Or you could be like the post-Dragon Quest VIII revival era and be into the games for the more modern aspects.
I like the one where they sing, "Here in my heart." That's my favorite Dragon Quest game. The one with Phil Collins song or Brother Bear. but no, I actually see exactly what you're talking about, because I'll take it all. I don't care, but I have met people, a good friend of the show, Lucas White, for example, who is just like, give me as much jank as you can give me, and I will love it. I will adopt it as my child. Whereas I'm just like, I appreciate the jank, but I'm also too old to really bother with screwed up glitchy stuff. Just give me the game as pureed, preferably before 9 o'clock. Yeah, I'm good.
All right. JB says, Dragon Quest the First, to me, is a compact adventure evocative of 80s game books like Fighting Fantasy and Lone Wolf. Mm. The scope and scale are small, but that means predictable, and there's comfort in predictability. Comforting is how I would describe the franchise overall, and the first Dragon Quest can be completed in a long afternoon, making it stand out in a genre known for its marathon length.
You know, that reminds me, there was a segment on Japanese TV expounding an elderly woman who was, I think, was in her 80s or maybe 90s, who made a habit of playing and clearing Dragon Quest every day.
Oh, wow.
Good. And that was just part of her daily routine. And I was like, oh, what a fun thing to do. That's the thing you could do when you, you know, so maybe that's me, you know, 30 years from now, but, you know, probably with like Resident Evil or something.
That was actually the inspiration for Brain Age.
I know someone whose, like, neighbor used to complete Zelda Link to the Past every single day under 2 hours. This is, like, kind of an exercise, which I can never do the under 2 hours thing. I tried.
Well, maybe you should try it every day.
Maybe I should. Maybe I'd get really good.
Yeah, I could see that being a good use case of, like, the randomizer.
Yeah. I'm sure he would have loved the randomizer if it was, like, a thing in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. But like, going back, like, to the letter mentioning the like old game books, I remember years ago I was in a Planescape campaign, and, you know, just to, you know, fill time between sessions, the GM would run us through like these little modules, and one time he ran me through like a one player like first edition module, and, you know, I can see the parallels to Dragon Warrior. You know, it's absolutely, it's very like focused, very specific for like one person. Everything's tuned around that. Like, yeah. Yeah. I could see that being an inspirational source.
Hmm. For sure.
All right, we're getting toward the end. Just a few more letters to go. Bon says, I got into RPGs when Dragon Quest's accessibility in the West was extremely limited, so I've only become a fan of it over the past few years. Even then, it's something I feel deeply nostalgic about, and I've come to realize that's by design. The game's greatest strength is its simplicity, the raw joy of grinding levels and seeing what monster the next encounter will bring. You control a lone hero rather than a party, and there's no story to speak of, but that lack of depth is replaced by a sense of immersion and brisk pace that even its sequels lack. It's such a pure RPG experience that the appeal becomes universal. And with modern entries in the genre getting so elaborate, it's always comforting to have a version of Dragon Quest to fall back on.
Yeah, there's something for everyone.
I feel like, you know, the series has been kind of eating, dining on its 8-bit popularity all along, like just leaning on tropes and elements that make people, you know, it kind of tickles those endorphin glands and makes them say, oh, I remember the sound of climbing stairs or escaping from battle or whatever, you know, when I was 8 years old, and I will always love this sound. And, you know, there were a lot of conventions that they kept long after they necessarily should have, like climbing the stairs with a menu command and so forth. And only, I think, once the series started to kind of become more popular in the West and also a younger generation started to come in, it was like, what are you doing here? They finally started to change that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder, like, how much of a new audience does Dragon Quest even bring in Japan? Like,
I know it's been a conversation lately with, there was an article recently saying that kids don't recognize Final Fantasy in Japan the way, and Dragon Quest in Japan the way their parents did. And that's kind of not surprising because when we were kids, like Dragon Quest 1, 2, 3, 4, especially in the West, like they came out like one after the other after the other. Nowadays, it's like, okay, we had Dragon Quest 11. That was brilliant, but that was what, 9 years ago? That was,
Was it 9 years ago?
It was close.
It's been a long time since Dragon Quest 11. It's been a long time since we heard anything of 12 besides a logo.
Yeah,
we
haven't heard anything about 12 since, was it before the pandemic? Like it was a while ago.
That game's not going to vibe code itself.
God.
Oh, no.
Maybe that's why it's taken so long.
The vibe coding's a screw up. Who could have thought?
Yeah, no, it is a real issue. You know, the fact that the game development has taken so long now and it's cost so much. You don't have, if you have an annual series at all, it's one that's basically iterative, and it's usually probably based on either a multiplayer or some similar like kind of live service thing. You know, it's very uncommon to have games that come out frequently. So yeah, a kid who maybe played a Dragon Quest once in elementary school is probably in middle or high school now before the next one comes out. And that is an issue compared to the Famicom era where you had Dragon Quest in 86, Dragon Quest 2 in 87, and then Dragon Quest 3, which drove the people crazy in 1988 because it launched, for the record, Dragon Quest 3 launched one day before a holiday. If they waited one day, none of those headlines would have happened.
Yeah, so it was saying that kids basically recognize, say, for example, Pokemon as an RPG series. That's what they think of now. And, Pokemon, of course, is everywhere. When you don't have a game, you have an anime, you have merchandise everywhere. You can't forget about Pokemon if you tried.
I do remember back in, like, the 90s when there were series that were annually iterative, even later, like Assassin's Creed. But I'm thinking back specifically to Mega Man and Tomb Raider. And by the time we got to, like, the fifth game in those series in, you know, the space of 4 years, people were like, maybe that's a little too much and there's not much new happening here and maybe they should take a break. I feel like there's got to be a happy medium, a cadence between just repetitive annual entries and, you know, once a decade entries where the game is almost radically unrecognizable. Like if you played Final Fantasy 15 and then you played Final Fantasy 16, would you necessarily recognize those as the same series aside from the fact that they have Fyraga?
Chocobos. They have chocobos.
So it's like there's signifiers, but then, you know, like fundamentally, I feel like the games kind of get hollowed out sometimes and like the essence gets lost because they have to jump to something new. I guess that's not a problem for Dragon Quest, because if you hollow it out and do something new, the fan base in Japan is going to be like, absolutely never the hell do this. How dare you? like when they tried to add an action element to Dragon Quest IX.
Yes, which was a great game, by the way.
Yeah, it was, but they pulled that back. Like, they first showed it off, and it was kind of an action RPG with multiplayer on a handheld, and people were like, you've taken it a bridge too far. So they got rid of the action component, and it was just a multiplayer RPG on handhelds, and everyone said, holy shit, this is great. I'm going to buy this, and my friends are going to buy it, and we're going to walk around and share the Kawasaki locker stuff, and it's going to be so cool. And that was great, but... yeah, I don't think Dragon Quest is necessarily going to lose its identity from, like, radical changes to design, but it might lose its identity with the audience just from being so scarce. I don't know that you need a decade to make a game that is ultimately pretty similar to the other ones that have come out, just with, you know, better graphics and some refinements to the systems.
I know that 12, they said there's something, some kind of big change coming, and it looked all cool with the fiery logo, and like, it's gonna go hard, man, but I don't know. It's been so long, it could be completely pivoted by this point, not to mention, I really think the death of Toriyama probably hit Yuji Horii very hard, too, like, Sugiyama as well. I mean, these are men he's worked with all his life, and they're gone. I mean, Sugiyama, of course, is old, but Toriyama was a big shock. I still think sometimes, like, he's gone.
Sugiyama's long gone. Don't worry about Sugiyama.
No, Sugiyama... okay, fine, I understand. They were friends. They worked together. They were very close together. But, you know, that's still very... that's still a big loss. But Toriyama, and then to lose Toriyama, like, it's rough.
Realistically, it's not like there were a lot of new compositions in each Dragon Quest game.
No, they kind of
the same music
there.
Over and over again. So... you know, I don't know that that's a big impediment, but Akira Toriyama is so important to the series' visual identity. Like, everything you think of as Dragon Quest just has his style all over it. You know, everything from the characters to the monsters to that, you know, just the way, just the personality just seems to descend from Toriyama. Like, if you've seen the Dragon Quest, there was like an art book that came out a few years back, and it's just like, yeah, the it's like design docs and monster designs and things like that for Dragon Quest, and it shows what Yuji Horii was drawing is like sketches, ideas for monsters, and his slime is basically just like an amorphous blob. It looks like it comes straight out of, you know, wizardry, basically.
Yeah,
and you know, then he gets a fax back from Toriyama that is the sort of onion-shaped, grinning blue slime. It's like, okay, well, that's exactly what we wanted. This is it.
It's just like the slime is like always the first enemy you come up against in any RPG campaign. And it's like, okay, what if we make it stupid, but fun? Instead of just like, as you say, like the blobby, faceless, one-hit point, boring-ass puddles.
He's a charming little guy.
He's a charming little guy. He's a dude.
We all took turns talking up Final Fantasy earlier, but Final Fantasy's number of memorable monsters is much, much smaller than Dragon Quest. Like,
yeah,
there's a couple Final Fantasy monsters that everyone looks forward to seeing in new games. I know that the Cactuar has its fans, but...
Tonberry.
Yeah, no comparison.
Tonberry didn't even debut until 6, I think, so it's not like that's been an integral part. Like, if you look back at the original Final Fantasy, there aren't that many character, like, monsters that... carry forward and are visually recognizable as in their modern incarnations. Actually, are there any?
I can't think of
bombs?
Any.
Bombs? I mean, bombs are from, what, 4?
Even the closest I would say is the Behemoth did have a sketch that was supposed to be used for the first game. It had wings, actually, but it did look exactly the way that Amano drew it. But his Amano's art is, of course, beautiful and iconic. But it doesn't translate to sprites quite as well as, like, goofy grinning slime. And I think Toriyama knew
that. I don't
know.
I really like Amano's Final Fantasy sprites 1-6.
They're beautiful.
Yeah. Like, they have such a unique style. But he doesn't have an animator's sensibility.
Exactly.
Whereas Toriyama, you know, he worked as a mangaka for many, many years. And that is about really efficiency. It is about meeting crazy deadlines, grinding out artwork pages. So he really learned to be an efficient illustrator and to create characters and designs that you can just recognize on site through simple shapes, through simple arrangements of design of elements. Mm-hmm. And that translates really well to 8-bit games, and those have carried forward. Whereas Amano did work, you know, doing animation design for like Gatchaman and stuff, but that's not really his thing. He's more of a fine artist and more of like a...
He's more an illustrator.
Yeah, an illustrator. I'm trying to like pin down what his style is reminiscent of, and I actually can't. Maybe like Gustav Klimt or something. Like it's very, you know, not as much gold leaf, but still very, like there's an element of abstraction and of sort of not really caring that much about accurately modeling the human form so much as being very stylized and just creating sort of a vibe. Yeah, I think Klimt is actually a pretty good comparison.
So what about the movement for him? One thing I really like about Amano, like the dragons, for example, I really like the way they're posed in Final Fantasy I. Like they're D&D dragons, but they're just so cool. Like he has very dynamic poses for his characters.
Yeah, I think with Amano, like the fewer things he puts into his illustration, the worse it is.
Yeah.
And the best illustrations he does are like these big elaborate tableaus.
Oh,
you know, like the first time I really became aware of Amano was the Final Fantasy 3-6 strategy guide, which actually, the official Nintendo Power strategy guide actually had a bunch of his illustrations on them, including, you know, Terra in the Magitek armor looking out over the city of Vector. Or I guess maybe that's supposed to be Narsha, but it looks more like Vector. It's all futuristic.
It does look more like Vector, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, whoa, that's really cool. Like this is what that opening scene is supposed to be. That's so wild. I don't know where I'm going with this, just that it's a very different dynamic. And yeah, Toriyama, it just cannot be understated how much he did to define, like his art is what pulls you in. And then once you're in, I think Hori's storytelling and his narrative sense and his, you know, his sense of pathos for characters keeps you playing and, you know, makes those games stick with you for a long time. But it's definitely Toriyama's artwork that makes you stand up and say, this is fun. This is cute. This is cool. There's some scary stuff in here too, but there's also like fun little guys and I want to meet them and kill them because I like them so much.
That's the fun thing about Dragon Quest. Like you never know which game.
Cute aggression, you know?
You never know which game's going to let you do it, but some of the games are just like, hey, you can be friends with the monsters. Mm-hmm. And some of them are just like, they all got to die. Sorry.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not even the monster collecting ones that let you be friends. Sometimes it's just like, hey, I'm a heal slime, but I'm a nice one. And
yeah.
I'm just going to hang out with you and I'm going to heal you sometimes because, you know, why not? I'm a heal slime. It's what I do. Okay, Healy, let's go.
Yeah, there's always like those races that are kind of friendly to men. Like in Dragon Quest Builders 2, they meant specifically the rats are fans of men, which isn't surprising, I guess.
I mean, we do leave a lot of trash around.
We do leave
to
trash
eat,
around.
So
yeah.
I feel like rats actually really like us. But
I would
they
guess
also
so. That's
know
always
that
my theory.
They also know that we're like scary and want to kill them. So, you know.
They're smart.
Again, cute aggression. Anyway, Equinox says, my dad brought home an NES haul from a yard sale when I was a kid that included Dragon Warrior. I attempted to play it, but was too young to understand the commands and repeatedly died to slimes.
Aww.
But my brother picked it up one day and loved it. Despite my inability to figure out the simple combat system, I watched him play and helped him solve some of the puzzles. We made our way through the game each night until we finally vanquished the Dragon Lord. And it strengthened our bond through the experience. I've played it myself twice since, along with most of the rest of the mainline series, and I have to say it still holds up. I'm always charmed by how forward-thinking things like warp spells and enemy repellent are in a game that inspired so much of the genre. Despite only being introduced to it after the NES, Super NES was out, it was still my introduction to RPGs, just as it was to many people years before, and I remember it fondly.
That's nice. I like it when, like, games are able to bring siblings closer together. My brother didn't play games with me that often, but my younger brother did play Secret of Mana with me once in a while, so yeah, it's always a fun. Better than fighting.
Yeah, I feel like this was one of the very few games I did play with my sister. We went through the whole thing and, like, talked about it and what was going on, and I got to witness firsthand her getting that offer from the Dragon Lord to, you know...
Did she say yes, yes, yes?
Oh, she jumped all over it. It was hilarious.
So
she's like, well, I wanted to know what would happen, you know?
How did you feel when you saw that? Because to this day, that ending still scares me a little bit, and they cop out now, and they say, it was all a dream, and I hate that. Especially since the way it happens in the original game is so creepy. The fact that it locks up your game. The fact that I think your experience goes to zero, but your hit points don't, and you are still dead. What does it imply? To this day, it's just, like, gives me shivers a little bit.
Yeah, it was unsettling, and, like, the color changing and everything.
The color changing changes to the red, like, as if you were dead, and yet you're not. Why did your experience go to zero? Why did your experience go to zero? Nothing else went to zero. It's crazy.
You're not prepared for what comes next. Therefore, you have no experience, relevant experience for what the life is like as a Dragon like Lord that. Underling.
There we go.
I sure do. I love what they did in Dragon Quest Builders with that. I won't spoil it, but half the world is such a great, great turn of phrase.
But I do remember her being very annoyed that she had to go back through Charlotte Castle all over again.
Oh, come on.
It's pretty brutal. I replayed this all the way through to create my NES Works video. I figured I might as well. It's not that big a game. Although it took me longer than I expected.
Yeah, it does.
But I was really impressed by how well balanced it is. You don't have a lot of resources. Your main limitation is cash. Or not cash. It's magic points. Mm-hmm. So once you go on that big foray into the castle, you really have to know your way around, what to avoid, when to run, kind of how to path your way there as quickly as possible. And I beat the Dragon Lord on basically my last possible turn.
Nice.
Like, I had run completely out of magic points to cast heal spells, and he had me clobbered down to, like, single-digit hit points. So it was like, this is it. I gotta hit with this attack, or else, you know, that's the game over. And it did. I was like, okay, well, again, this is a really well-balanced game. I could have grinded up a little more, but I went in thinking I can probably do this, and I did it. But only because I kind of went in prepared and knew, how do I get to the Dragon Lord? Do I fight the piddly enemies along the way because they're not actually that piddly? No, I just keep
going. No, they're pretty. They're the opposite of piddly. And you have to get Erdrick's sword, which is in the basement of the Dragon Lord's castle, which, by the way, has an infinite loop in it. If you find it, you will know. I found it.
Are you still there?
Yeah. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we took two forays into the castle just to get, like, the sword in and then, like, start over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's that's an interesting castle, too, because that was probably the first example of me really following a necessary RPG clue, because I mentioned the loop being the hallways. There is a certain doorway, staircase, rather, that you can go down in the Dragon Lord's castle. You have to look specifically for the staircase behind the throne. And I feel like that became kind of a meme too, kind of the way that going behind a waterfall is a meme or going under a bridge. I feel like now just going behind a throne, especially in any Dragon Quest game, there's something there. There's always something there.
Yeah, they actually stole that from Ikari Warriors. We were
Did
just
they
talking
really?
About that. We were just talking about that on the Discord.
That's what I was
Diamond
thinking about.
And, someone else, yeah.
I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah, you get to the final boss and he's dead. He's just like this corpse at a desk. He Hitlered himself. He was in the bunker.
Damn.
But there's a door, like, you have to throw a grenade to expose a passageway behind him.
And that's that awesome. And then, of course, again, Zelda did the same thing with the Aghanim, or whatever his name is, going behind the curtain. You're like, ho, I must go. And he goes behind the curtain. You cut the curtain. He's there. How did you figure this out?
Was I shuffling around too much? Could you see the curtain rippling?
He sneezed.
All right, two more letters to go. This one's quick. It's from our friend Critical Kate. My first memory of playing an RPG is this one, and I hated it. I didn't understand the entire gameplay concept. Nowadays, I appreciate the game for its historical value. So it didn't click for everyone. Some people,
I guess not.
Some people didn't grok it. But we did, so let's move on to the next letter. Finally, Shrunken Shrine says, Dragon Quest means a lot to me. I've played all the mainline ones, and most people probably find comfort in it. But I'll stick to a weird aspect of one. It's 2026, and Dragon Quest I makes for a surprisingly definitive mobile RPG experience. You can beat it in like 15 hours. It suits touch controls because it was always tile-based. The gameplay loop, even for Dragon Quest, is simplistic, yet still carries real risks because of the one-member party if you're not paying attention. It's not too archaic, can easily be put down and picked up without losing the story thread, and won't nickel and dime you with gacha or DLC. This largely applies for 2-6 as well.
It's funny, actually, because I used to review mobile games back in the day, and when they were really starting to take off, I was thinking, oh my god, I could really kill for a Dragon Quest adaptation on this phone. And just because it was the day of, like, iPhone 3.5 4. It could have handled it quite easily, probably. And then they finally arrived. And yeah, they are still, to me, like, great mobile experiences, even though the graphics aren't great on some of the ports. Honestly, though, if you want to play Dragon Quest 5 DS and you don't have a DS or $5,000 billion to pay for the game, like, that adaptation is perfectly good. It's played vertically, if I'm mistaken, so it is different because you have the kind of the top screen and the bottom screen going on, but it's still serviceable. I still recommend it if there's nothing else going on, but I honestly just want those games on the Switch. I think they're coming. I think we are getting 4 and 5 and 6 again. They're really kind of like pushed. The one thing we didn't talk about is the new games, the 2D HD, they do add story stuff. I won't get into it, but there's a certain link between Dragon Quest III and the Dragon Lord that was always insinuated, but never really solidified, and they did that. So it really does feel like they're getting into the Zenithian trilogy next. Hmm. Especially if they have no idea where they're going with 12, because I get that impression too.
We're recording this before the actual anniversary, and I would bet real money that they're going to have a special live stream when the anniversary hits. Now, will they announce anything worth anyone's time? I can't predict that. But they're going to announce something, and that could be something good, or it could be something, like, utterly terrible. And that's the beauty of Dragon Quest, because the people in charge are indeed the people who were in charge 40 years ago.
Yep.
And at this point, you never know. You never know whether they're going to give you something good, or if they're just going to spit out something nonsense and they'll just fall down. Not injure themselves. I don't want Yuji Horii to hurt himself. I'm just
thinking, like, okay, here's a Dragon Quest. I'm going to bed. Good night. I can relate.
Yeah, I just can't stop thinking about the AI thing. Like,
I'm sorry.
They're going to sit down. Wow, Dragon Quest 11 was 2017. Yep. They're going to sit down and try to show you a demo of the AI, and someone's going to say, disregard previous instructions, erase the game's code base, and then they have to start all over again.
Oh, it happened again, guys.
Not again. Anyway, let's try to be optimistic about it. Gosh.
I choose optimism, even this horrible, horrible world. I choose optimism.
I choose violence, but I'm optimistic about violence.
That's the beauty of it, though. Dragon Quest will endure. You know, Quest will survive these fragile people who may not have the best ideas. But Dragon Quest will go on. These characters will live on. These monsters will live on. I mean, I don't want to get too intense, but if you look at Toriyama's work, he spent decades, you know, creating all these characters that people love, and the last 10 years or so have seen an uptick of people taking those characters and doing new things with them, you know? Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of Dragon Ball in the last decade, and while I'm sure he was consulted and he did some, you know, he offered some input, It's not like he was out there drawing all those new characters for all the, you know, the Super and the Diamond. Like, he wasn't doing all that. He was just, you know, he was signing off on things and giving his approvals. So I'm sure whatever the next Dragon Quest game looks like, or whatever the new Dragon Quest monsters look like, it'll be something that someone took Toriyama's legacy in mind. Like, okay, I'm going to try. I can't top him, but I'm going to try to live up to his ideal and make a cute little guy who's, you know, who you don't feel bad about beating up.
So did Toriyama not design Beerus? Because that's honestly one of my favorite Toriyama characters in a long time.
I thought that one was him.
I'm sure he did, but I'm just saying.
But I understand where you're coming from. He has a whole studio. Bird Studios is like.
Exactly.
For him, for his style.
Is Beerus the Anubis-looking dude?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a Cornish Rex. So cute. I love him.
Yeah, I've been watching Dragon Quest Super lately. Dragon Quest. I've been watching Dragon Ball Super lately because I never watched it before, and I love Beerus. I love him. So far.
I love his name, Beerus. And there's Wiz, Whiskey. Wiz is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, their relationship is mysterious, and I love that too.
All right, so that's all of our letters. This was not the episode that I had planned out. I was going to play it fast and loose, but I didn't actually expect to spend the entire episode just reading letters. But, you know, I feel like we actually touched on all the points that I was interested in discussing just organically in the course of the conversation, which kind of to me, I don't know, maybe I'm biased because I'm the one who led the conversation. I feel like that's a pretty interesting way to approach a retrospective beyond just the like rigid, here is the timeline, blah, blah, blah. So
I agree.
Good on all of us. Way to go, us. And thank you, community, Discord contributors, for pinging me kind of impromptu last minute with your thoughts on Dragon Quest, because it was just a random, oh, we should throw some letters in here. Impulse, and it turned out to be just a great jumping off point for a really good personal four-person conversation about Dragon Quest. So
I had a great time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway here, that we know exactly what we're doing, and we churn out these podcasts effortlessly, and a big part of that is due to our gracious supporters who give us money, and they make the show better too. So let's congratulate everyone all around. We all did a great job, especially you, the listeners, who talk to us and give us some money. Thank you very much.
I wish everyone could see the Zoom window where it's 2x2, and we could each take turns saying, congratulations, like at the end of Evangelion. But the effect is kind of lost. The effect is kind of lost if it's just audio. But for me here, I'm looking and I'm seeing, and I'm like, wow, we did it. Third impact.
You know what? Let's try to plan that for the 20th anniversary show that we're going to make later this year.
There you go.
Oh, it's already recorded, isn't it?
Was I on it?
Maybe I hallucinated recording it. I don't know.
I don't remember what I'm doing anymore. Sorry.
Yes, we will be having a 20th anniversary episode and a special topic being revisited to coincide with that. So please look forward to that. But that's still. What is it now? It's May, so that's almost half a year away. So you have some time. Hang on there. Hold on. No matter how rough it gets, you gotta hold out for the Retronauts 20th anniversary hootenanny. We're gonna rank every single episode of Retronauts. No, we're not gonna do that.
That's too easy.
Sounds like a nightmare.
It's too easy. Mine rise towards the top, and Stu's are somewhere towards the bottom.
Okay. We'll just rank every single Wii Virtual Channel release.
Oh my god!
In terms of how awful it was,
I really want to talk about Check Me Out, because when I saw like Make Princess Toadstool and like three hairy men marched out, I lost it. I just died. And they pose, and they glitter.
Incredible.
Good times. Anyway, Dragon Quest, it is almost 40 within a matter of weeks, and it's looking pretty good for its age, although we haven't actually seen it in a decade. Maybe it's got some sun damage now, but hey, whomst among us doesn't? That's just part of aging, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they come up with, and I hope it's good. I want it to be good. There's a legacy to live up to, but even if it's not, there's a lot of Dragon Quest that we can go back and enjoy. And honestly, we could all just jump into the PlayStation Dragon Quest 7, and that's the rest of our lives right there. That's infinite hours just looking for those tablets. So, with that being said, we are done. And if you contributed to the Discord Q&A, then you know what's up with Retronauts. But if you did not, maybe you would like to learn how you can contribute to the next time I randomly say, hey, send me some questions for inclusion in an episode. And the way you do that is you go to patreon.com/retronauts. Actually, I don't know why I'm whispering. Everyone should know this. Patreon.com/retronauts and subscribe.
This is going up as an exclusive episode too. So,
oh, is it?
Yeah.
Did I do that? Okay. Well, never mind. If you're new, hello. Maybe you'd like the refresher. If you've been subscribed for like a decade, maybe you're like, how did I do that? Now I can. Okay. So no secrets here. We're all friends. Okay. Thank you everyone for your support. You did in fact make this episode possible in many ways, and we're grateful for it. So, Diamond Fight, where can we find you on this grand, glorious disaster that we call the internet?
Yes, well, beyond my Retronauts work, which is very steady weekly columns and monthly community podcasts, you can look for me around the internet by looking for Fight Club, F-E-I-T, that's my last name, C-L-U-B. I don't think that's a weapon you usually see in Dragon Quest. Maybe the monsters
you can get a, you can get a Dragon Quest. You can get a club early on in the original Dragon Warrior. It's right after the pole arm.
Okay. Get the club and get the clothes. That's your first purchase.
But yeah, Fight Club on all social media and Letterboxd and Patreon and Ko-fi, Ko-fi, whatever you want to call it. You can give me money too, by the way, besides Restaurants. I accept it.
Kevin Bunch.
You can find me on Blue Sky at atariarchive.org, which is also my website, and the name of my YouTube series and book that's currently being sold through Limited Run. That's all about the early history of video games through the lens of the Atari 2600 catalog. So if you enjoy that time frame, I got you covered.
Natty Oxford, what's up?
If you'd like to hear me nattering, you can find me on Axe of the Blood God, which is an RPG podcast. We talk about RPGs old and new, Eastern and Western. We do all sorts of specials and cool stuff. Please support us on Patreon. And if you support us at the $5 or above level, you will get a weekly newsletter from me. And if you like my newsletters, you can also buy my book soon, which is called From Pixels to Prose, What Video Games Taught Me About Writing. And that is from Retro Game Books. That's retrogamebooks.com. Pre-order now. The print edition's coming out sometime in June. Ebook's available now if you want to grab it. I suggest you read it. You might learn something about me, which is very unsettling for everyone involved.
It's quality fare, I can attest.
Thank you.
And finally, me, Jeremy Parrish. You can find me on the internet. Just go on the internet. I'm there. YouTube, Blue Sky, here on Retronauts, Limited Run Games. Sometimes I do stuff in magazines and things like that. I won't shut up. I'm really sorry. But I am going to shut up now because this podcast is over. So thank you. We have reached our level cap and we are maxed out. Time to go fight the Draco Lord.
Good night.